right now we're seeing very few new listings, but we're seeing sales climb, which means that buyers are very hot for properties right now, but sellers are not necessarily coming to the market.
Look, I get it. The Toronto real estate market is confusing. Whether you're a new or experienced investor or just looking for a home to raise your family in, join us at Broadview Table Talks as you sit around the table with my friends and talk about the real estate and the ever-changing market in Toronto.
All right, so the May's numbers, 2023, just came out for the Toronto real estate prices.
Mm-hmm.
And surprising. The average price of a detached home, all housing types.
All housing types.
In Toronto is?
1.2.
1.193.
Just under 1.2.
1.196 million.
Yep.
It's a lot of money. And if you compare that to the low point, which the bottom was in January at 1.37 million, which has basically gone up by 15.3% since January.
Yeah. And it's still down compared to year over year numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1.210.
Right. So we are recording this on the 7th, on 6th, sorry. Tomorrow, the Bank of Canada is going to announce their inflation numbers, not inflation numbers, the interest rate.
New interest rate hike. Yeah.
And people are saying that it could go up, it can go flat. It's kind of like a toss-up between the two.
Yeah, people are very undecided about it right now.
Because on one hand, every time you raise the interest rates, it increases the housing costs, mm-hmm. a portion of the housing costs anyway, which is 40% of the basket, 30-40%. Mm-hmm. So it, by nature, increases inflation, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But moreover, the interesting thing that messes with the inflation number is the amount of immigration that comes into the country.
Which is constant and steady.
Right. Because we need it, right? A million people came to the country last year.
Yeah.
And a third of them come to Toronto.
Yeah.
And the reason why that we need immigration is because our old age security, like old age pensions, like the current pensions right now, CPP and EI, that's all covered by the current working force.
Yeah.
So the CPP and EI that people pay in their pensions mm-hmm. or in their daily paychecks go to contribute the people that are using it right now.
Yep. And so, that's why we need this foreseeable growth continuing on, because eventually you and I are going to, or people in our generation are going to have the same problem. They're going to rely on CPP and EI as well.
Right.
And who's going to pay for that?
Wish there was a better way to do this. So we know that we can't stop immigration because we need it.
Yep.
But at the same time, we don't have a housing strategy to be able to house everybody because we can't keep up with the supply of housing.
Yeah.
And there's too much red tape to build, and the labor shortages and materials costs and everything like that.
Yeah.
It just can't keep up with it.
Yeah. And we're arguing over what kind of spaces we should use to actually build more properties. You know, we've got low rise housing, people complaining about high rise homes coming into their neighborhoods. And then we've got density issues with certain areas, and it's a bit of a mess.
And Airbnb, people taking Airbnbs, using that stock to kind of take away from the available housing stock.
Yep.
There's something on the CBC, the National, last night about that as well, too.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately, like, the stats are, well, first of all, the stats are in. And just let me rhyme off some interesting stats before we kind of move forward. But an average detached house right now is 1.55 million. It's up 0.6%. So it's kind of relatively flat year over year.
Mm.
The downtown condos, which I define as CO1 and CO8 for realtors that are listing, but basically between Dufferin and DVP, South of Bloor. The average price right now is $790,000. And that's minus 4% year over year increases. But if you look at month over month, prices for downtown condos, it's actually average price is actually climbing or kind of a little flat, like 0.6%, 1% around there from the previous month. So it's slowly climbing. It's kind of relatively there. Obviously, it's never going to be the exact same because, you know, markets fluctuate a lot and they never stay the same.
Yeah.
But the very, very, very interesting stat that I saw recently or number that I see is that the average sales price to list price is up 4.8% higher than the asking price. So 105% of asking is what things are selling at.
Well, I like to look at that number. And then I also like to look at the average listing days on market.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is crawling down too. And it's down to 14 right now.
14 days from 17 the month before, 19 before that. And then in January and February is 22 and January is 29 days.
Yeah.
But year over year, we're actually up by 16%. So last May, it was 12 days on market because it was still kind of hot, if you remember, when the interest rate started hiking.
It was. But I think, you know, all those numbers together really paints a picture of that struggle between sellers and buyers right now and this power dynamic between the two. Like, on one hand, you've got these sellers who's holding on to the inventory, but the prices that they want aren't necessarily there.
Why do you think they're holding on to the inventory, sellers?
They can. If they don't get the perceived value that they want out of selling their home, they don't necessarily have to move. So any listings that we see now, there is probably a pretty good reason why they're choosing to sell now.
Right. They're motivated, right?
They're motivated.
They talk about the six Ds. There's death, divorce.
Diapers.
Debt. Diapers, new babies.
Yeah.
Distance, like for relocation.
Yeah, for relocation. Some new jobs, yeah.
What's the last D? Anyway.
Like the reasons that they absolutely have to move.
Right. It's just life situations.
Very good reasons.
You know,
yeah.
If you're starting a new family and you got a new kid on the way, mm-hmm. you don't give a crap what the, well, you kind of care what the interest rates are, but you don't really care about what the market's doing. You just want to buy a home.
Yeah. You have a very real need for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I would say that people are listing right now. I agree with that. They're not choosing to list because they want to, it's because they have to.
Yeah.
Or is a good reason for it. They could repurpose that capital or something.
Yeah. Like they can explain away why they can sell now.
There's a reason for it.
There's a reason for it, yeah.
Right.
And they can justify it.
But ultimately, the number of sales were up by 25%, mm-hmm. 24.7%. But the number of new listings is down at a really, like a 20-year low, they're saying, right? But this month, in particular, was down by almost 19% year over year for the amount of new listings that came on the market. Mm-hmm. And active standing inventory is actually minus 23% year mm-hmm. over year. So that confirms the theory that you're right. People don't want to sell unless they truly have to.
Yeah. And in doing so, I mean, that like there's another ratio that we use, the sales to new listing ratio. Mm-hmm. It's 59 now. And it just keeps showing you that the sellers have the power because they're the ones who are holding the inventory.
Okay, so explain what the sales to new listings ratio is in your words.
This is essentially a ratio that we use to determine whether it's a buyer's market or a seller's market based on how many sales there are versus new listings that come on the market. So right now we're seeing very few new listings, but we're seeing sales climb, which means that buyers are very hot for properties right now, but sellers are not necessarily coming to the market, which in doing so, the sellers constrict the supply side of the market and they can sort of determine exactly what the price is going to be that the buyers in general have to deal with.
Great explanation. So typically what I would say is that a ratio of 50% is like perfectly balanced, yeah. right? So that means you have, let's call it 10,000 sales, mm-hmm. right, for that month. And then another 20,000 listings come onto the market, mm-hmm. right, during that month.
Yeah.
So 10,000 of those are sold. There's mm-hmm. another 10,000 remaining for the next month.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you're anywhere, you know, between 40 to 60%, that's typically what I define as somewhat of a balanced market.
Yeah.
When you get to above 60%, it becomes really a seller's market. And below 40%, yeah. it becomes a buyer's market, right?
Yeah.
Because the buyers have more choice because there's a more supply out there.
Yeah, which we haven't seen in a very long time.
Right, right. Actually, I can tell you exactly when we saw that number. But ultimately, let's go to, you know, for example, December 2021, we saw 116% sales to new listings ratio mm-hmm. on average and aggregate throughout all housing types, condos, yeah. houses, detached, whatever. 116% sales to new listing ratio. That yep. means if you're selling like 10,000 sales that month, that means there's only like what, 8,000 or 9,000 new listings.
Yeah, I remember those days. Bidding, it was tough, like crazy. Bidding wars every time. And you can consistently tell your buyers exactly what you think is going to be over the list price.
Right.
Because it was just so consistent.
And I generally find December gives you really skewed numbers. Like for example, December 2020 was 121%. Mm-hmm. December 19 was 123%. That's because what happens during December? Christmas.
Christmas, yeah.
Christmas, right? So people everyone's are stuck on holiday season. No one lists it, but there's still people buying because they have to buy.
Yep.
So that means there's no new listings onto the market,
yeah.
which means it pushes up the ratio. So it's kind of a skewed number. But if you look at a low point, actually I'm going to sort it right now by the amount of sales and new listings ratio from the lowest. So if you start by sending one of the earliest, lowest times when it was truly a buyer's market was January 09. So you might not have been in the market back then. I remember that's when the financial crisis happened, right? In 2008. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 96 was another one, January 1996.
Also another financial crisis.
What do we have in 96 again? That was the...
That was the global recession.
Okay. Sure, I don't remember that.
Something happened in Asia. I can't remember what it was exactly. I mean, I was a little bit too young to understand economics.
Right. Okay, so the third lowest sales to new listings ratio period was October 2008. And again, that was the global financial crisis. Mm-hmm. November 2008, that was at 35, 36%. Now, if you look at the highest sales to new listing ratio period, again, all these were just, oh, wow, interesting. They're all Decembers. But if you look at like maybe November 1996, that was the 95%. Yeah, again, towards the end of the year, the sales and listing ratio becomes a lot higher. It doesn't mean the price is higher because, again, there's more, there's the same amount of buyers, just call it, but less sellers. So that boosts the number, right?
Boosts the numbers. That could also be a cyclical thing as well, because, you know, towards the end of the year, sellers don't necessarily want to list because, you know, it's around the holiday season. They just want to focus on family and holidays.
Right.
So that's what skews the number.
Right. Okay. So if you look at February 2017, if you remember that, that was right before the Fair Housing Plan came. Was that 2018 or 2017? The Fair Housing Plan that Kathleen Wynne put in place.
2018,
right? Okay. Well, February 2017, sales new listing ratio is at 81.2%, which is pretty high.
Like, wouldn't 2017 have been when the Bank of Canada finally slashed interest rates down below 1%?
Probably. And in that time period, in that same time period, February 2017, the average sales price to list price was at 108%, 108.1%. So that means everything you put on the market was going 8.1%
above
over asking, right? On aggregate. I'm like, you got to remember, these are like places that nobody want to be. Like, I don't want to say like some neighborhoods that people don't want to be in.
Yeah, yeah.
We're still going over asking. It's crazy.
That would have been the start of the offer night madness, if I recall correctly. Yeah. Like that was when condominiums were starting to do offer nights and we all thought that was crazy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so we're kind of at a somewhat balanced, but more of a seller's market territory. More of a seller's market,
yeah. It's really that power dynamic struggle that we're seeing there between sellers and buyers.
Okay, so I guess a lot of questions I've been getting recently is, what do you do when you have a tenanted property and you want to sell it? Because the market is kind of picking up again. It's rebounding from the lows that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in those situations?
Right. Well, especially for investors who actually want to get out now that the market's a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do?
So a couple of things I would say is that, like, first of all, Ontario, as you may know, it's all rent control. Well, not rent control. Anything before 2018, November 15, 2018, that was built before then, is rent controlled. Anything after November 15, 2018 is not rent controlled.
Right.
So first occupied is the definition of what they say, which means it was first built.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen if what happens if you completely re-renovate a house and you like completely gut it through permits and everything. Can you prove that it was first occupied? Like it was a brand new home. Anyway, whatever, I'm getting into the weeds. If it's rent controlled, then you can only raise it by whatever the Ontario government says. So this year has been 2.5%.
The set rate, yeah.
Right? If it's not rent controlled, then you can jack up the rent to whatever you want with 90 days notice.
Yep.
And some landlords have been using that as an advantage. But I don't think it's the right thing to do. But sometimes they use that as a power. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that was done is because it spurs developers to build. Because no one's building these purpose-built rentals right now, especially since, you know, properties from 30 years ago, they're still collecting the same amount of rent. It's only increasing very, very slowly.
Yeah.
So I get rent controls. I'm not against rent controls. But that's one way to, if you wanted to sell a property and have it untenanted, then you could do that.
Yeah.
Why would you want a property untenanted, right? Well, again, because it's easier to show, you have better access. Like if you're going to see a place as a buyer, you're going to want to see the place.
Yeah. You don't need to follow the 24-hour notice restriction. You don't have to worry about letting out someone's dog. It's easier to just walk in there and take a look at what it is.
It's not as messy. You can stage it. And even further than that, if you want to go occupy the property, then you don't have to give the whole N12 notice or N11 notice, whatever, N12 notice.
N12, yeah.
And pay the 1 month's rent.
Yep.
Right. You don't give them compensation. And then you can also charge market rents, right? What if you were in a rent-controlled building that was, you know, something that's worth like, I don't know, call it $2,500 a month rent, but they're only paying $2,000 because you're during the COVID times, right? And now as an investor, you want higher rents.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
No.
If the tenant's already there.
And that's why we're seeing more terrible stories of these rent evictions happening.
Right. So while I'm not advocating kicking tenants out.
No, of course. We're just hearing about it more.
Right, of course, yeah, because it's kind of getting around the rules. Well, so anyway, just to make it clear, I'm not advocating about kicking tenants out. No. But if you need to sell something, it's obviously better to get to have the tenant vacate.
Yeah.
So how can you do that? You can obviously offer them buyouts, and a lot of tenants have been using that as a jackpot kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So they hold a property ransom until then.
I've actually had that happen to a client.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
Yep. People just choose not to move because they know that they, they're in the power seat, right? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the way I do it is that I'm okay with the tenant staying there until a life situation happens where they potentially need more space. Mm-hmm. They need to buy a house. Now they have a kid. They have a they want a yard. If I have a house, if I have a condo, that is, or if I'm investing in a freehold, mm-hmm. just let them move on their own. Maybe they buy something on their own.
Yeah.
Right.
Just naturally leave. No hard feelings.
Right.
Yeah.
It's probably better that way. But if you can't wait that long and you truly need to sell, then you can have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And be like, listen, I have to sell. And you can play the pity route. You mm-hmm. can tell them like, listen, I'm going to sell regardless. And any new purchaser is going to either do the N12 and kick you out anyway, because they're going to buy it for themselves.
Yeah.
Or if they're an investor, they're not going to be happy with their market rent. And they're going to either force you out if it's not rent controlled by mm-hmm. raising the rents to where it is, mm-hmm. or they're going to make it uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Now, I know some tenants have their rights to stay in the place and they don't actually have to move. And it's going to be a struggle.
Right.
But it makes it super uncomfortable.
It does.
So, that's what I would say to people that want to kick out their tenants in order to sell the place. Right? Yeah. It's not a good, it's a very delicate and sensitive situation.
They have to tread very lightly.
Right. So a lot of landlords think that you can just kick them out because the lease ended.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. No. Like automatically in Ontario, if it's a residential lease and it follows the Residential Tenancies Act, mm-hmm. after the 1 year is up, or whatever the lease term is, it automatically goes month to month, and they're offered the same protections as if they actually had a lease in place.
Yeah, the exact same terms as the original rental agreement.
So why would somebody want to renew another year lease?
Right, they don't want to get tied into another full year lease. It's like
the Why would they want to?
It would lock them in. A landlord wouldn't be able to give them a 90 days notice to raise rent, or wouldn't be able to give them 60 days notice if they need a possession of the property for either themselves or someone that's taking care of them.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's the main strategy of why you'd want to sign a 1 year lease if the landlord's willing to offer to you. Like both parties have to agree to that, right?
Both parties have to sign on it.
Yeah. Like a lot of landlords come to me for whatever reason, they think that they can just because the year is over that now, I want to sell. You got to move out. That's not the case.
Yeah.
So you got to get your tenant's cooperation to either move out or allow for showings. Yeah. And the thing is, yes, you're allowed to show the place to a prospective buyer with 24 hours written notice. That's what the Residential Tenancies Act says.
Yeah.
But who's to say that the tenant's going to not make it uncomfortable for anybody seeing the place, right? I've actually had doors slam my face,
right?
You know, from tenants that don't want to move.
Yeah.
They just say like, and me as a showing agent, I'm not going to be like busting through the door. Be like, hey, you got to show me this place.
Right.
You know,
you try to be polite, right? And you want to make things work.
And if it doesn't work out, and then like the tenant says, you're not coming to see this place, I'm not opening the door for you.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? I was going to move on to the next property.
Yeah. I've had a lot of go directs and then the tenants just nowhere to be found.
Or they're not. Yeah, exactly. I've had that too, right? That's the worst. Come direct, tenants can open the door for you. And then the time when you show up, you can't call them. The concierge tries to call them and no one's there.
Yeah. Right? It's a sneaky way of not letting you in. It happens.
And I get where these tenants are coming from because they don't want to lose their homes. It wasn't their fault that, you know, the seller wanted to sell.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess that comes with renting. Like the housing insecurity, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's asset at the end of the day.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's the pros and cons of, you know, buying versus renting.
Right.
Which we cover from time to time.
Right.
Like you get that security when you buy and you don't have to worry about someone else moving in and kicking you out.
Right.
Or demanding new things from you as a tenant.
Oh yeah. We had one of our guys recently moved into a purpose-built rental and he realized he needed more space. He wanted to move to a different location. So he moved to a different location. Mm-hmm. And then that purpose-built rental property manager started dinging him on everything.
Oof.
Right, like holes in the walls, that'd be $100, and all in all added to like $500 for damage.
Yeah.
Whereas a regular landlord would have had the compassion and said like, oh, you know what, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. Like my own tenant, for example, you know, he's going through cancer or whatever, so I said, you know, don't worry, just I'll take care of it, it's gonna cost me like $5,000 to repair the place, but whatever, I don't care. So that's one benefit of choosing to rent from an individual landlord. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you're at the mercy of that individual landlord saying I gotta sell.
Yeah.
Versus a purpose-built rental, which is owned most likely by institutional capital, a pension fund, or maybe like a large group of investors.
Yeah.
And they want to rent it out in forever, basically.
Yeah. Well, they also have a checklist in case you do move out, and that's how they ding you. They're like, okay, as long as there's a mark on the wall, it's going to cost you money to fix it. They don't care.
They have a set price. That's a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, they're less compassionate because it's an institution.
That's right. And they just care about the money at the end of the day. They care about the returns.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the trade-off. But anyway, if you're an individual landlord and you want to get your tenant out, I would say the best thing to do is just to reason with them, giving them plenty of notice,
yeah.
not just the required 3 months notice that you have to give them,
yeah,
90 days notice, whatever. Just talk to them, have a conversation and negotiate with them, right?
Because, yeah.
you know, you can offer them relocation services. You offer them, you know, if you have another apartment to give them, that'd be great too.
Yeah, yeah.
You offer them moving services or just to make the transition so much easier.
For sure. I think the happiest tenants I've had were the ones that were given at least 6 months notice, just based on a conversation with the landlord saying, hey, I'm thinking about selling. It's not going to happen anytime soon, but just a heads up, you know, it's probably going to happen in half a year. Like, I think that's a lot of time, which the tenants appreciate. 90 days doesn't feel like a lot of time to sort of change your whole life and move somewhere else.
It's not enough time.
It's daunting.
Yeah, it's not enough time.
Yeah.
Plus they have to save up for the first and last payment again, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they haven't saved for that first and last.
For sure.
So I think it's better if you give people the option of more time, like exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's face it, like, yes, in theory, you could stay in a place forever, 20, 30, 40, 50 years at the same rent. If your life doesn't change, you don't get bored of the place.
Right.
There's some people actually do stay there forever.
Yep.
But for the most part, maybe it's a wake-up call for somebody to be like, you know what? Maybe it's true. Maybe I do need more space. Maybe I do need that two-bedroom, or maybe I do want to move to the outer skirts of Toronto and have a yard, for example, for the same amount of rent.
For sure.
Or maybe I want to move back downtown or something, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It could be an opportunity if you have a good relationship with your tenant to be able to say, like, listen, I really truly need to sell. So
yeah,
that's probably the best way.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, what other misnomers have you heard of from misinformation of some landlords that are thinking, oh, the term is up, they can move out and I can sell now. So, or, you know, I've heard actually recently, he said, I have to sell. So I'm gonna give him 90 days notice and then that's it. Right.
I've had a worse one.
What?
I've had someone looking to buy an investment property who did not like how little the tenant, current tenant was paying.
Right.
So they tried to say, well, upon closing, I can just kick them out, right? Because technically I'm not their landlord.
Ooh, yes, that's true. A lot of people think that.
Yeah. It's like, no, you're assuming the tenant. Like, they have a rental contract.
They have assuming the tenant unless you're moving it from yourself or somebody under your care.
Yeah, under your
care. And that can't be a sibling.
Yeah.
There's plenty of case law that says that it can't be a sibling.
Right.
It has to be either a parent that you're, it's under your guardianship, yeah. or it's
someone, a child, a dependent.
A child, a dependent.
Yeah.
So it has to be a dependent.
Or someone who's taking care of
your dependents.
Your dependents, yeah.
Right.
And they have to be there for a minimum of a year.
1 year, or else it's a bad faith eviction.
Bad faith eviction, yeah. That's exactly
Which it. Could potentially, if they take you to the landlord tenant board, be a $50,000 fine.
Exactly.
Plus damages.
Yeah.
So it's not a good idea to kick out your tenant per se. It's best to negotiate with them. And
oh yeah, be on good terms and sort of reason.
Right.
Be human.
Right.
Yeah.
Some tenants might take advantage of the situation and try to ransom you, right?
I've had that happen.
So yeah, I keep that in mind too. Yeah, what happened to your situation?
So I had a client who really, really wanted to purchase a penthouse unit. Mm-hmm. It was an investment property for the sellers and it was tenanted. So we went through the proper steps of making sure that the selling sellers provided the tenant with an N12 because the purchasers were indeed actually going to use that unit for themselves. And it's been 3 years and they're still there. So it wasn't a bad faith eviction. It was a good faith eviction. But closing came and so did the date that the tenants agreed to leave. But they decided to hold on to the keys and said, we're not going to give this back to you unless you pay us $5,000.
Oh.
Even though they had already been given 1 month of compensation.
Oh, so did they pay the $5,000?
It was either pay the $5,000 or bring the tenants to, I believe it was civil court, not even landlord. It's not even the LTB.
Yeah.
Like, that's out of their jurisdiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was either the $5,000 or pay a lawyer to represent them in civil court. So they decided to just pay the $5,000.
Oh my God, that sucks.
Yeah, it was diabolical.
Yeah. So I guess with like tenants and landlords, there's two different types. There's ones on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
The greedy landlords and then there's like the greedy tenants.
Opportunistic greedy tenants. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So the majority of people out there are kind of somewhere in between.
Yes.
Right? In
At
the
least
middle,
we
neutral. Right? There's some outliers, obviously, that cause bad examples for everybody and create, scare everybody off from this whole rental situation.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, these rules need to be in place to protect both sides. And as a landlord, as long as you're playing within the rules, I think actually they're quite fair, to be honest, if you're playing within those rules and you know the rules.
They're balanced.
Right.
As bizarre as it sounds to
some
people.
And personally, I wouldn't want to do Airbnb because I feel like it's not it's not worth, the juice is not worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
Yes, you get more rental.
It's a whole different animal.
Yeah. Like, you'll get more rental income. You're not subject to the rent, Residential Tenancies Act, so you can kick them out if they're not paying, or you can send a cop in there and then remove them for trespassing or whatever.
Yeah.
And they actually remove them if they don't have an agreement in place, and it's just a short-term rental. But the problem is, now you got to deal with the city. Yep. You got to pay with taxes if you do that. You got to deal with condo boards, or if you have a freehold, then you got to deal with, like, again, the city to pay, you know, commercial licensing fee or whatever. Yep. And if you're doing it for your own property, it's only 180 days you can do it. It's a whole bunch of, like, nightmare. Not to mention the turnover and the wear and tear.
Yeah, you're actually running a hotel.
It's a business.
It's a day-to-day operation.
Yeah, very hands-on.
Yeah,
or you're paying somebody 20-25%
which is a huge cut of your margin.
It's huge.
Yeah.
So I personally don't like it. I'd rather play by the rules within the Residential Tenancies Act and make sure you have a good, safe housing for tenants to rent from.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. But it's not the case for everybody. So if you're looking to evict your tenant to sell your place, there's a certain protocol for that and a certain strategy for that.
Yep.
We'd be happy to talk to you. If you have any questions about it, just reach out below, book an appointment, and we'll talk about your current situation. Thanks for watching.
Add it up.
Thanks for sticking out to the very end. I hope you got some value out of this. Do me a favor, please press like and subscribe. But more than anything, leave me some feedback so we know what to produce for you going forward. Thanks again.